Okay, do you want to read the copy or do you want me to read the copy? I'm just saying.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 362, recorded on September 17th, 2014.
Welcome to the 362nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 195th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback.
You know,
Aw, yeah.
You know, it's 195 now in the Video Game Roundtable. You know, it's coming up to a nice round number.
I'm just saying, any day now.
Yeah, well, any 5 weeks from now. But, yeah, so...
Well, you never know. We might, you know...
I'll decide to...
You know, it 200, it's a pretty big, you know, kind of number. We might squeeze in an extra one just to make sure that our recording dates fall somewhere good.
Yeah.
You know, so don't say 5 weeks. Say, you know, five more episodes.
You know, and the thing is that I joined this the gaming podcast at 200... And I'm thinking, you know, in like a year, I'll have been on this podcast longer than the original podcasters had been on it. It's strange. I'll be the senior podcaster on both. But, you know, the thing is...
Oh, you've always been the senior citizen.
But, you know, the thing is that it's an effort to do this many podcasts, you know, even just if you're counting Video Game Roundtable, 195, you know, you have to have some sort of commitment. You know, I just realized I started this podcast, I think, in 2008. So, yeah, it's, you know, and just saying to everybody out there, you know, it's still fun, at least for me. I don't know about other people, but it's fun for me. And, you know, we're slowly getting to that milestone. And you've been around since... What was
episode
it?
Episode 87, I think.
So, yeah, something like that. So you've had a good over 100 of these episodes, too. I mean, not counting the – well, I mean, you've had over 100 episodes because even if you count the times you've been absent, so.
Well, you know, make video games. This isn't exactly my only job.
Speaking of video games, what have you been playing?
You know, I just today – discovered this awesome little app.
Uh-oh.
Let's see, what the heck is it called? It's called Slice Fractions.
Huh, it sounds like threes, but tell us about it.
It's akin to Cut the Rope.
Oh, okay.
However, instead of being, instead of being strictly about, you know, physics puzzles, it's about, you know, it's that same kind of mechanic, but incorporating an element of fractions. So you have this giant boulder that's this boulder of ice suspended by about three or four different, you know, anchor points, and you have to cut up the boulder.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So you have to like cut up the boulder, in order for it to put out the right sized fire.
Yeah.
If you have 2 1-quarter sized fires and one half sized fire, to cut, make sure you cut up the boulder into the appropriate three pieces.
Is this with a sort of like a mammoth?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Because I'm scrolling up the scrolling up the trailer for it right now to see what you're discussing. So you're saying this is like Cut the Rope, except instead of nom 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 and sweets, it's cutting up fractions.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, it is geared towards children, obviously, as like a teaching aid.
Right.
However, the gameplay is so engaging.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even realize that it was supposed to be edutainment.
Right.
I recommend it. It's
so
lots of fun.
It's Slice Fractions, and I see it for the iPad, but it's also for iPhone too.
Yes, I've been playing it on my iPhone most of the afternoon.
That's cool, and you'll have a mammoth who occasionally wears a cowboy hat.
Oh, well, the great part is every time you get past a chapter, you get a new hat.
Oh, okay. The one I'm seeing, he's wearing a 10-gallon hat.
But by the time I stopped playing, my hat looked as if I had taken a cartoon pile of ice cream cone and just dunked it on my little mammoth's head. It's really cute. I mean, I highly recommend it. Not just for children, if you have any kind of, fun time. I mean, it's akin to, like, Where's My Water or Cut the Rope. I mean, it's that same kind of puzzle board feeling.
Well, Cut the Rope is a physics game, you know, and it teaches people about physics, even though they don't know they're
teaching. Right. There's a physics element in this, too, because you have to make sure you cut the ice chunks so that the larger portion of it will fall on the board where it is needed.
Okay.
So, it's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it.
Right. So it's Slice Fractions. I've been a little bit more mundane. I recently picked up Madden, and I've been playing it, trying to decide if I like it or not. I am leaning on the it could have been better.
See, I'd ask which Madden, but they're all the same.
Well, the latest Madden, I'll just say. And,
they're all the same.
I haven't been playing Destiny because I've been so busy. And what happens is when I play a sports game like Madden or NBA, I usually do the create a player's career mode, in which you take on the role of a player who's going through his career, and I usually stick on that and don't even play the other modes. And it's sort of like, you know, I just want to see him through the entire career and see if I can't get him into the Hall of Fame, that sort of thing. So, yeah. Other than that, you know, I haven't really been playing much this past week except for those two new games. And it constantly reminds me that I don't have enough time to play games, period.
Ooh. The other one that I was playing, and you're going to laugh at me, but when you see the correlation I draw, when you see the correlation I draw, you will hopefully laugh a little less. So I was playing Curious George is Curious About Shapes and Colors.
Okay.
And it's adorable to the point where it's like The Room for preschoolers.
The Room, as in the Tommy Wiseau film?
Yes. Well, no. As in like the room that I mentioned a few weeks ago for iOS and iOS and Android.
Oh, okay. I was thinking also maybe of Silent Hill 4, The Room. That's kind of bleak.
Well, to put it in a reference that you can understand,
no.
Mr. Senior Citizen over there, it's kind of similar to like Seventh Guest or Myst.
Okay.
But for preschoolers, it's really adorable, and it revolves around shapes and colors.
And Curious George.
That's another one. And Curious George is the IP that's attached to it. But for any of you young parents, I recommend those two games. They're lots of fun.
Did you meet the man with the yellow hat?
The man with the yellow hat talks you through everything.
Oh. You know, I've never actually attached a voice to him. Now, I know that I think it was George Clooney who voiced him in the movie. I didn't see the movie, but I think it was George Clooney who voiced the man in the hat. But I've never attached a voice to him, you know?
Well, the only voice that I've attached to, you know, emotionally, my inner child has attached to Curious George is the name of that really polite customer service sounding woman who used to read them on, like, Reading Rainbow
or whatever. Ferrell.
George was curious.
Yeah, it was Will Ferrell who played the man with the yellow hat, not... Anyways, so this episode is going to get a little political, and
is it really?
Yeah. So for a change, it's gonna. What's it called? There's a lot of because, like I said, I don't plan these episodes. It's just the way they happen. It's just the news that pops up.
This is the news, ladies and gentlemen. We don't just arbitrarily pick the stories.
Yeah, they pick themselves. we're not going to do quite the political stuff yet. Actually, this one is more of a follow-up to...
Are we not having a gaming flashback? Or is that at the
There's
end?
No gaming flashback. There is.
Oh,
there
well, is. Then you've made a liar out of me.
No,
I'm sorry.
Actually, there is an extended question of the week. It's one of those special discussions.
Oh, it's a mashup. Okay,
it's a discussion.
Until we get to that,
we're gonna have a discussion. Not just the question of the week, but a discussion question of the week. And like I said, there's a new feature that I introduced like a couple of weeks ago. So, the first item you can read since the next item after this one, I want you to be able to formulate your opinions and save up your bile. So this
one, you make me sound like a hateful person.
I'm not saying you're I'm saying you're a righteous person that you'll have you're not gonna explode, but I'm gonna picture steam coming out of your ears a little bit.
I have a highly developed sense of justice being an Eagle Scout. I have to say that.
Okay. I was never a Scout. Anyways, we're going to move on to the first item. Go ahead, Paul.
Rust creator says, quote, "I'd have done the same thing on Mahjong deal." And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz.
By the way, it's Mojang. So let's see.
Mojang, not Mahjong.
It sounds like you were going to say he decided to want to play Mahjong a little bit.
Why didn't the headline just say Minecraft? Okay. Gary's mod and Rust creator Gary Newman has defended the sale of Mojang to Microsoft, saying he would have done the same thing. Quote, long story short, I'd have done the same thing. I don't write the copy, folks. I just read it. The money is enough to very much take care of all of the staff. The game is in relatively safe hands. Mojang's legacy is a huge success story instead of a one-hit wonder. Everyone wins. You can seriously say you'd have done. Can you seriously say you'd have done it differently? Mr. Mod explains this that at the time would be the judge on Microsoft's plans for the studio and Minecraft franchise, but from a business perspective, they'll want to continue its success. He also gave a developer's perspective on the responsibilities of running a studio and created a handy infographic to make his point even more clear. Quote, once you start hiring people, your whole attitude changes. You're not just screwing around with your life anymore. You're screwing around with other people's lives and the lives of their families. You can't just sell out and say, screw everyone or screw everyone over. Quote, companies like Blitz that go bust don't pay people what they're owed. Letting 175 staff members go, then starting up under another name almost straight away. Those are the guys you don't want to be. I'm sure more than the top guys at Mojang became very financially rich due to this deal, and that's something that should be admired, not seen as a bad thing.
Okay, so the infographic that he mentions, the first is a pie chart that says things that matter on the internet, and it's like 90% red being a sellout and blue, like 5% blue how much money, but he says the things that matter in reality, half the pie chart is his staff. About a third is money, about a third is happiness, and about a third is customers, and a little sliver is being a sellout. So what he's saying, and you're going to probably go into this because that when you have a staff, they become the most important thing of your studio. Go ahead, Paul.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been saying this for years. Games don't just form themselves out of the ether. You know, people make these things. Like, we do this for a living, guys. You know, that's how we put food on our tables. And, you know, I've never been in this, quite frankly, unenviable position of having to be the one to decide to, you know, lay people off. But I can't imagine from, you know, whether you're an indie developer or you're, you know, the executive vice president of a large studio, that these are going to be easy decisions. And so, you know, quite frankly, if Mojang, you know, is taking care of its people, has agreed, you know, has reached with Microsoft an agreement that
over
the majority of their work.
Yeah.
Well, you know, aside from the money, but has, you know, been able to negotiate that these people will be able to continue working on this fantastic product because they've done a good job, then, you know, really, you know, who's to sell out? That's such a juvenile construct.
And, you know, you have to understand.
You know, that's right up there with, like, money doesn't – oh, it doesn't matter how much money I make. Well, like, yeah, it does if you can't keep your lights on.
Well, Marcus Persson, keep in mind, has probably been working with these people like 15 years or something like that. You know, after doing a lot of Minecraft, you know, like one or two people, you keep on getting people, you keep on adding people. And you'd want to reward them at some point, you know, because Paul can speak to the matter that, you know, finding new employment is not easy.
Especially in the games industry. Are you kidding?
So, you know, if he's able to, you know, get people nice little stock options like this, then, you know, they're set. You know, he's basically saying, okay, you guys are set now. You know, we got you a deal for $2 billion, you know, and Microsoft's going to make sure that your valuable property, they're going to make sure you get paid and you get work and you know, you have steady work and, you know, that sort of thing. You know,
and you know what, from a developer's perspective, sometimes relationships end and that's just the nature of the business. But regardless of the circumstances, if you can comport yourself as a class act, then really everyone can walk away from it. It's business. And we can move on, you know, we can move forward with our lives. Yeah. And if this way people are, can do that with a little bit more financial security or a continuing job offer, then, you know, God bless.
Also, you know, you have to understand that Marcus Persson, the guy who orchestrated this deal, had stopped working on Minecraft a long time ago. He had already passed it on to his underlings, you know, to keep it, you know, moving and forward and making updates. So, you know, it's sort of like making sure that these people that he's trusted with this, with the project, continue to work on the project, you know. So, I don't know. It's just silly that people would just go berserk. I wonder if it's because it's Microsoft. I mean, if, say, Sega or Nintendo or Sony had done it, you know, people said, oh, cool, you know.
You know who really complains about other people selling out? The poor.
The other little bit of news that's attached to this, that isn't it, is that Microsoft has confirmed that they would continue making Minecraft for all platforms, which is sort of unheard of right now.
Because it's actually kind of amazing in that they're hybridizing their business model.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be, you know, people who own the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, people who own, you know, Macs, don't have to worry that Microsoft is going to either A, make a Microsoft Minecraft 2 and only make it for Microsoft products, or, you know, stop support on other platforms. You know, Microsoft said that they are fully committed to all platforms for this game because that's what this game is. And, you know, that's one thing Microsoft knows. You cannot change the game. There's a reason why it's popular, and you don't want to screw around with that popularity.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. And with the sale, Microsoft is going to be breaking even. So they had the leeway to make this deal, you know.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see how profitable Minecraft is for Microsoft, because I never really thought of it as a $2 billion investment, but I didn't think of that as Skype as that sort of investment, and they made gangbusters out of it. So
I wish them lots and lots of luck, and I'm sure that my Minecraft playing friends would agree with me.
I would include Dan, and I wonder what Dan thinks of all this. Dan Quick, for those of you who don't know, because he's an obsessive Minecraft player.
Well, yeah, but what does Joe have to say about all this?
Joe who?
Joe Mama!
Uh-huh. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and Paul?
You walked into that one.
I walked into it, but I didn't react. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and this one is for you to listen to, Paul, and you can formulate your opinion as I say this, and I'm interested to see what you have to say about this.
Okay, well, hopefully my Chrome doesn't crash.
Okay. Conservative group issues video lambasting gaming's quote-unquote feminist critics, and this comes to us from Polygon. Conservative think tank the American Enterprise Institute has weighed in on the issue of sexism and misogyny in video games, arguing that the whole thing has been cooked up by, quote, feminist tech writers and concernocrats. The AEI offers many opinions on subjects and is generally considered to be representative of the ideas associated with the American right-wing thinking. Many of its senior members served in the last Bush administration. In a video hosted by resident scholar Christina Hoff Summers, the AEI argues that hardcore games are aimed at men and therefore should be right to feature imagery appealing to that audience. Summers argues that criticizing games for having male characters is like criticizing daytime TV shows like Oprah for heavily featuring female issues. Quote, are there video games that are riddled with sexism? She said, voicing an image over a sexily scantily clad young woman in a video game. Do they promote a culture of misogyny and violence that must be dismantled? My answer is no. Showing footage of a documentary, documentary maker Anita Sarkeesian, who, by the way, we talked about last week, if I remember correctly, Summers mocks researchers as gender activists and hipsters with degrees in cultural studies, while acknowledging that they make some valid points. I love that little turn there. Critics of games that only want male video. Okay, critics of games only want, quote, the male video game culture to die, she says. She claims that those who disagree with feminist critics have used logic, evidence, and humor to state their case, although she mentions that Sarkeesian and others have faced serious threats. Summer says that she has spent the last few weeks looking into gaming culture and talking to gamers, and that critics of gaming should, quote unquote, stand down. I love the fact she spent the last few weeks studying this. Go ahead, Paul.
I
I so don't even know where to begin. Well, okay, not having personally seen this particular anti-feminism in video games video, where do we even begin
okay,
with
I
a piece
begin.
Like this?
You know what?
Okay.
Let me begin with one thing. She says that critics of games that only want, quote-unquote, the male video game culture to die. To me, that's like saying civil rights activists want the whites-only culture to die, you know? And what she basically said, which says that, you know what? This is a male cultured thing. So if you're a girl and are offended, well, don't do it. Just do something else.
It just angers me because it goes so far beyond that. Okay, yes.
That's basically what she's saying at the very base of what she's saying. That's what she's saying. You know, if you don't like it, if you're a girl and you don't like it, well, don't do it.
Well, it's not about being a girl and not liking it. It's about what are we teaching our sons is the right conduct to have around the women in their life. Well, you know, the domestic violence is not a fun, you know, is not a funny issue.
I don't think she's mentioning that, though.
Well, yeah, but this is exactly what Anita was talking about. So it's not. So it's regard. Let me go back into the copy where she specifically says, "Oh, violence against women is okay."
Well, she didn't say that. She said, "Do they promote a culture of misogyny and violence that must be dismantled?" My answer:
misogyny and violence.
But she's saying that they. What's it called? She's claiming that it doesn't promote a culture of misogyny. She's not backing misogyny and violence. She's just saying it doesn't cause.
She's backing it up with her opinion and without any evidence.
Her opinion.
She's entitled to her opinion. Thanks for sharing. We're going to go move on to some verifiable fact.
Well, here you remember there was a Street Fighter. If you remember this story, this was like from a few months back, a Street Fighter tournament in which this guy just basically browbeat this girl into tears while playing. You know, and he was kicked out because of all the misogyny that he was showing. You know, it's and by the way, this guy was also later arrested for hitting his ex-girlfriend.
Oh, gee, I wonder if these two incidents are connected.
Anyway, but the thing is that it's wrong on so many. My favorite part is where she says, They do this. They have a few good points. Oh, by the way, you know, the critics of Anita Sarkeesian have said so with humor and all that stuff. She's also been threatened with violence.
You know, I've been looking into being a pimp for the last several days, and I clearly have an entitled opinion. And so, therefore, I can say there's absolutely no exploitation of women going on there because I've been looking into this for the past several hours.
You know what I would love to see?
I'm just so annoyed.
I would love to see her have someone make one of those Japanese dating sims with her in it, you know, in which she wears panties and, you know, she urges the gamer to fondle her breasts and tell them how much she loves having that done and, you know, and all that stuff and just be degraded, but have her image enjoy it and see if she enjoys, hey, look, it's a male culture. You shouldn't, hey, you don't like it. Go away because we're going to do this.
You know, there's been throughout history, and I'm going to close my thoughts on this. There have been throughout history groups of people who have often been swindled into not understanding that something is their problem, or to put it more concisely, into thinking that things are somebody else's problem and not their own.
If
this particular woman doesn't see sexism being as a problem, then I feel very sorry for her.
Well, here's the thing.
On an individual basis.
You know who are the people who really count? Are the developers and the publishers. And, you know, people people like BioWare have addressed this. You know, people like, you know, the important people, the people who actually matter, not some think tank who wants to offer their opinion, which has absolutely no weight in the video game industry for the most part. You know, who's going to listen to them and say, oh, yes, I agree. Rush Limbaugh? I mean, who are the people who are going to look at her and say, oh, you know what? That's right. The only people I can think of are 15-year-olds who don't make games.
You know what? If she wants to spend her life making a home and voting against equal pay for women, that's fine. But she shouldn't expect all women to be okay with receiving equal pay. And this is kind of a similarly
a similarly charged issue.
You know, I just find the term concernocrats interesting. Well, yeah, it's bad to be concerned about stuff. I don't understand that phrase.
Like, it's wrong for you to be concerned about an issue and therefore go out and vote about it.
But you know what?
I have so many assumptions of this woman already that I don't even want. Like, I don't even want. Like, I don't even want to talk about her anymore.
Why don't you guess the color of her hair? I bet you can guess it.
I am going to say light brown.
Sort of. She's blondish, light brown. That's, yeah.
No, light brown. I'm not going to go so far as blonde, but light brown.
But she was blonde.
You
know, it's...
I have all sorts of assumptions about her race and her socioeconomic status and her political beliefs, and really no good...
She's playing to her own stereotype. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no good can continue of me having...
Here's the thing, is that, you know...
...words about this woman.
You know what? Her thinking, especially in the video games industry, is going extinct. So, you know what? You can go extinct along with them. That's you know... It's sort of like, you know, the Pope, saying that masturbation is a sin. Guess what? No one's listening to you if you say that. I don't know.
Let's leave the Pope out of it for a second because he had some news this week too, but that's kind of tangential to what we're talking about.
Anyways, we're going to go move on to the next item, which is also pretty ludicrous. You can take this, Paul.
Trade your violent video games in for ice cream in California. And this comes to us from GameStop.
Spot, not GameStop. One's Spot. A store, the other one's.
I'm sorry, my copy.
You know what?
Is frozen.
I do the same thing sometimes. I think GameSpot and I say GameStop and vice versa. So it's.
People in Northern California's Marion County will soon have the option of either trading in their violent video games at GameStop for cash or to the county itself for ice cream.
Yeah.
The Marion County Independent Journal. There was a typo. The Marin County Independent Journal reports that District Attorney Ed Berberian.
It's like a Berber rug, but with I-A-N on the end. Anyways, his name isn't that important.
The Marin County Independent Journal reports that District Attorney Ed Berberian is launching a new buyback program where people can turn in toy guns and violent video games in exchange for delicious Ben & Jerry's ice cream. Berberian, who held a similar buyback program last year for firearms, is partnering with the Center for Domestic Peace and Vermont-based ice cream purveyor Ben & Jerry's for the campaign. On Saturdays in October, anyone can turn in toy guns and violent video games at various Marin County locations to receive their free ice cream, although we don't know what flavor it is, flavors will be offered, or how many scoops you'll get. The full list of buyback locations is available online. Center for Domestic Peace Development and Community Relations Manager Marla Hedlund said the buyback program is an effort to, quote, inspire people to become part of the movement to creative peace and violence-free environment. For his part, Berberian said getting rid of toy guns and violent video games could have a major impact on a child's development. Decreasing a person's exposure to violent video games could, quote, alter how one later addresses conflict situations, he says. There was no mention in the report about how Marin County will determine if a video game is, quote, violent, but M-rated games are likely going to be targeted. It is also unclear what Marin County will do with the games and toy guns it collects. A handful of prominent game developers are either based in Marin County or have an office there, including Telltale Games, makers of The Walking Dead, The Wolf Among Us, 2K Marin, makers of Bioshock, Visual Concepts, NBA 2K series, and Deep Silver, makers of Saints Row and Dead Island.
You know, that's a nice trade in a $60 game for a $5 pint of Ben & Jerry's.
Yeah, I mean, the valuation seems a little bit off, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, well, they did say buyback program, but, you know, one thing is, what if I bought it digitally? Can I trade in my digital game for ice cream?
Probably not.
And the thing is, okay, you know, having buybacks for real guns, I have no problem with, because you know what guns can do? Actual guns? They can hurt people. Toy guns and violent video games cannot hurt anyone. And I'm going to say this right now. The average age of the gamer has gotten to like 38, 39. And I don't know if these people know this, but these people have played video games since they were 8, 9, 10 and have grown up to be nice, sane, normal people who don't use guns and don't have violence and have happy lives. I mean, where is the study that says that it'll address how one later addresses conflict situations? Where is the, where's your evidence, sir? I mean, I it's nice that they, you know, I have some pretty bad games that just happen to be violent, which I guess I can trade in for ice cream.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you don't want them anymore, that's definitely a route, you know, the to GameStop, go instead of the $4 you'll get from GameStop.
Well, you know, something like Aliens Colonial Marines, I'd gladly give them, you know. And if they want to smash it, I say feel free. But the thing is, you know, this. I you know, every time someone says this, I would like to say, okay, show me the facts, please. I don't want anecdotes. I don't want, you know, stories. I want cold, hard facts, and I will give you some back in return, like the stuff I just said about the average age of the gamer. You know, and most adults can buy their own ice cream for $5.
Yeah, I mean, this is another situation where the intentions are good, but it doesn't feel like anybody really thought this all the way through. I mean, just an evaluation prospect alone.
Can I give them my copies of, say, Die Hard and get Ben an ice cream, you know, or RoboCop, which are very violent. They're more violent than any video game I ever played, you know. Or, you know, how about some violent books? And there's one book that's extremely violent. It's called The Bible. Yeah, there's stuff in there.
Ooh,
there's stuff in there which will.
I want someone to try that.
No, I'm serious. There is stuff in there which describes, you know, like what was it? Abraham's daughters or some guy's daughters wanted to have sex with their father, you know, to appease God, and at some point they dice up a guy, and you know, it's just.
Well, I'm at the risk of pulling us back from a really weird off-ramp tangent. You know, what are these people thinking? And I don't understand.
Well,
in the hands of a sane, rational person, a gun can be a good thing. I mean, this is why we have a Second Amendment. All right.
Yeah, but you know, having a buyback program for actual guns is something I don't mind, because you know, one less gun means one less chance that you're actually gonna set it off and kill a member of your family. And what people don't understand is that a lot of guns, most of the time, they shoot people of that household, not someone trying to bust in.
Well, I mean, aside from that, you know, we're trying to look at what it is we're teaching our children, which I think is a bigger concern. To try to focus on, you know, this generation, it happens to be video games. On the previous generation, it was, you know, that gosh darn rock and roll music. I mean,
yeah, what about
it? Just assuages. It's just letting parents shrug off responsibility for being involved with their children.
You know, in the 50s, kids played cowboys and Indians, you know. Yeah, I'm not going to get into the what's it called, the stereotype of Indian. I'm just saying, you know, the what's it called, which they had bow and arrows.
Cops and robbers.
You know, cops and robbers, in which they had, you know, cap guns, you know, and stuff like that. The only reason to, you know, the only toy guns, you know, a water gun isn't going to fool anybody except, you know, I mean, is anybody going to be fooled by a fluorescent green thing that shoots water? You know, what do you, playing laser tag is bad? I don't get it.
What's really interesting to me is the stance they seem to have taken on local industry. Because quite frankly, if I was a large video game maker, and I had an office in Marin County, where this buyback program was happening, I would feel particularly targeted, and I might look into moving my studio elsewhere.
Okay, well, that's certainly possible. I mean, there's plenty of places in around San Mateo. To tell you the truth.
Screw that. Move to North Carolina.
Or move out of the country. Go to Vancouver. I mean, Canada's been very proactive about, you know, getting video game developers in their country. Because, you know,
and this ties back into, you know, we're always saying we want more jobs in America, but we don't want the products that American jobs create. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
And we're going to do something like that insulting. Like, I'm just really annoyed.
Okay.
I'm bothered by this entire program.
So we're going to move on to the next item. And by the way, this item, guess what, has no political aspects at all. It is purely a video game news item, which has no implications beyond the video game industry. Isn't that refreshing?
Well, this week it sure is.
Xbox game may soon be streamed to PC, and this comes from Games Industry Biz. Microsoft may be developing a streaming service that'll allow games from their both their recent consoles, I guess the Xbox and the Xbox 360, Xbox One, to be played on a PC with minimal lag, claims technology news site Neowen. Such a service would likely build upon Out of Time, a research project within the company made public last month, which used FPS Doom 3 and RPG Fable 3 to test a method of disguising network latency for mobile cloud gaming. It would enable Microsoft to compete directly with the PlayStation Now, the Sony streaming service, currently in open beta in the US and Canada. This report claims that the service has progressed beyond the concept stage and is currently in testing with highly positive reactions so far from users. Microsoft are yet to comment, either confirming nor denying the story. So, is this one way that you can get backwards compatibility, I guess?
Yay, backwards compatibility!
The question is, how do they know which games you own? You see, that's the problem. Do you have to buy those games over again, or is it going to be a subscription service to play all of the games that were on? It's tricky to figure out how this thing is going to work. Or do you trade in discs, or have some sort of proof that you own that disc so you can stream it on your PC?
I have really no idea.
So, you know, I would love to be able to play my 360 games, you know, on the PC, so I don't have to hook up my 360 to anything. You know, and just play it on my PC, but I'm not going to buy the games I already own if I do that. So let me ask you a question. Does game streaming appeal to you?
You know, game streaming does not really appeal to me, nor does it appeal to the greater market in Japan and China. You know, these technologies have been much more readily available in those markets, and yet consumers still don't want to move over. They want their physical copy game.
Or in our case, we don't mind digital games. We just want to own them. Anyway, we own them in some way, at least have them on our hard drive. You know, because everybody...
I mean, but at the same time, how much money have I parted with, you know, for Facebook games?
Or for paying for Zelda over and over and over again, the original Zelda.
All right, look, I haven't done that more than like 5 times, okay? Just because it's a great game that never, ever gets old.
You know, now that you're talking about it, that theme song, the original chiptune theme song from the NES version is now playing in my head. Thanks a lot. And I'm staring at the gold cassette that's across from me up on the shelf there.
I have Link whistling the Mario Brothers song stuck in my head now. Thanks a lot.
Anyway, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Take it away, Paul. We only have one letter.
From Alpha Shard. At Notch selling Mojang to Microsoft, I was a bit apprehensive when I first heard the story. Though we have no confirmation. Oh, we do now. I'm taking the silence as to mean a deal is being discussed and nothing is finalized yet. The more I thought about it, and after listening to your take on it, I think it could be all right. I'm just concerned that they might change for using the PC version. I also come to be used to Mojang having added features with each new version release, and I hope that continues. I'm not so bothered by Notch selling the company since he walked away from Minecraft when he did the full release a couple of years ago. I hope that he will also be able to use our own custom skins, resource packs, and mods for the PC. Well, you know, one PC game that has actually always supported its fan community has been The Sims. So maybe Microsoft will take a look at EA's model there in allowing, you know, PC players to use
Microsoft
custom content.
I think Microsoft is going to be basically doing what they did with BioWare, and that is, you go over there, you do what you do, and just make us money.
There you go. Which is always great. At good games are worth paying for, I do agree with the sentiment that quality games are indeed worth paying for. Oh, good. Like Skyrim was, I'm sure a lot of hard work went into that game. The quote, a terrible game lasts forever, is right when you have the Atari ET as an example. You know, I did not know
that was like the worst video game ever made until I went to graduate school. I'm just saying, used to rock that game like there was no tomorrow.
I enjoyed that game because I was a little kid and I was a lot more forgiving. You know, it didn't matter to me. It didn't seem crappy to me because I just enjoyed it. You know, when you grow up, you get more refined tastes.
In my house, we read that instruction booklet, so we knew how to play.
But I do remember you had to get the Reese's Pieces to regain health. Little pixel on the screen.
They were little like 3-pixel dots.
Yeah. But they
at 80 shows, I got both the Dungeons and Dragons and Captive End show references. I loved both shows as a kid. Oh, well, good. Then you can stay.
Yeah, but Paul still hates uni.
unnecessary unicorn. At Final Fantasy VI... I knew that I'd forgotten to mention Tara from Final Fantasy VI. I feel that the first half of that game was about Tara and Celeste, the second half of the game. I remember the argument that I got with my friend over this when we noticed that I wasn't using Edgar or Locke in my party, and he questioned me, why aren't you using the main guys? My response was, what main guys? Tara and Celeste are both the heroes, and he got so mad and yelled at me that Edgar was the hero. How can he be the hero or Locke when you can beat the game without them at all? Moreover, the whole story revolved around the Epsers and the Empire trying to use them.
Okay, so you're the Final Fantasy expert here. What is he talking about?
Okay, so the game starts off with Tara being sent to destroy, being sent with orders to destroy a village. Right. She's under the control of the evil Empire. She meets this resistance fighter named Locke, and apparently she has like some mild feelings for him, and he, helps break her brainwashing. So just looking at the relationship between those two characters, you really can see it from either perspective. But I've always seen it from Tara's perspective because she is the first playable character. So I always thought she was the protagonist. And then later, Locke and Tara meet Celeste or Cells. And she becomes, and she's an engineered being, that joins as like the third of our important, NPCs. And it's just, as from a gameplay perspective, you have more inclination to play as her, or at least to have her in your party, because she does open up a different branch of magic. It's, pretty useful. So to me, those become like the main three characters.
Yeah, but
I'm not even sure which one.
How large can your party be? It's a question.
Your party can be four characters large, but at one point, towards the end of the game, towards the middle of the game, you have to split into three different parties of four, and then takes you in.
There's 12 characters.
I want to say 14 or 16.
Okay.
There's a lot of characters in this game, and an interrupting squid, but I'll bypass that. The point is that as the story branches off, Tara, Locke, and Cells each have their own missions, and they become leaders each of their own individual group with their own tasks, and you have to switch from one to the other. I don't even remember exactly which one Edgar is. I believe he's the prince that, you can assign to each of the three different parties. So I never considered him to be much of a main character. But yeah, that's the background there. So for anyone who is trying to follow that train of thought.
On a side note, Final Fantasy IV is now available on Steam. So if anybody who cares about that.
Woohoo! Yeah. Moving back to Alpha Shard. And just as an FYI, I'm a guy, but that doesn't mean I can't emphasize with women. Oh, go you, Alpha Shard. Or feel rejected when I hear things like, girls won't like you if you play video games. Why don't you play a sport instead? Ooh! Good point. I also did misunderstand your point, Paul. Thanks for clearing it up. At the question of the week, I remember making a few custom units in Civ 2 and using the map editor. I've played around with programs like RPG Maker and other similar RPG games like Neverwinter. The amount of work in making even the smallest dungeons or quests is just tremendous. Oh, well, yeah, that happens. So I have to give it to those who make entire games worth of content and quality work. Work, you get what you pay for.
Yeah. I mean, making a good Heroes of Might and Magic map, you know, you really have to put a lot of planning into it.
Oh, yeah, and whatever you do, don't press that grows every turn button.
Oh, yeah.
For your last guy. Otherwise, by the time you get to the dragon horde at the end, there'll be quite literally a million dragons on that last little pixel.
A thousand black dragons, you know. It's like,
well, no, if you press this one particular control, it will just grow. It will just grow every turn. So if you're, you know, an explorer type.
It started with two, and there was 1,000 by the time they got to. You know, fortunately, it was a side quest on one of my maps. Fortunately, it was a side quest, so it was sort of like, yeah, whatever. We don't have to deal with that stuff. So whatever. So anyway, all right, we have a new question of the week, and this is related to pre-order games. Now, this is the new This is one of the new features that we have. That actually, you know, we're gonna have a little discussion. You know, I'm gonna have this little article, and then Paul, you can say what you think, and then we'll leave it up to the listeners to, you know, as their question of the week. So this comes from Kotaku. Marketing retailers explain pre-order offers. A brand new pre-order bonus for the highly anticipated Alien Isolation has been released. Back then, Alien Isolation was being marketed as a sequel set a few years before the original Alien movie, featuring a brand new set of characters in the same universe. Yet, Alien Isolation's newly revealed pre-order bonus includes the original cast of Alien. It played directly to hardcore fans of the series, and then they went ballistic because apparently they thought that the only way to get this DLC was to have to pre-order the game. Chris Wright runs Surprise Attack, a specialist games marketing firm. Once upon a time, he was the director of marketing in Australia for THQ, and he spent close to a decade marketing AAA video games to a broad audience. Pre-orders inform the retailer, he explained. Orders to the publishers are often heavily based on that. Publishers want to get their pre-orders up. That helps you sell more stock. That's why so many of these offers are about pre-orders for specialist games. It's basically money in the bank. Chris argues that even consumers have a general understanding of the pact between publisher and retail. Consumers are well aware that games will not sell out, he says. That's what makes it even more difficult to convince customers to put their money down early. Everyone is having to incentivize a little bit more, he says. Since I've started, it's gotten a bit more complex. Nowadays, it's common for a single game to have multiple pre-order bonuses at multiple different specialist retailers. It's a fine line to walk, he says. You have to keep your messaging simple. I think that having multiple different editions, you can create that paralysis of choice. I don't know which one I'm going to pick, so I won't choose any of them. But the thing is that publishers are constantly trying to figure out what works, constantly trying to figure out different things. Multiple editions have been around for a while, so they must be working on some level, otherwise they would just stop doing them. It's just the nature of retail. If you have five retailers that are significant and you have an offer, you're going to need five different offers. Because if you only have one, because if you only have one, then all the retailers have the same offer, and that's not competitive. One retailer doesn't have an advantage over the other. So the question is, do you do pre-orders? And if you do, do the bonuses that you get with it matter to you?
You know, I don't think I've ever pre-ordered a game. I will spend additional money for a special edition and all of the, you know, fun little things that we get for that. You know, I ran all over Burbank on release day to get Skyward Sword just so I can get a golden Wiimote. And I got the last one, by the way. But yeah, you know, I'm not really incentivized by pre-order offers as much as I am by special edition offers.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first pre-order I ever did was Civilization 2, and I'm glad I did because that thing was sold out. And when I went up to say, okay, I want to pick up my copy of Civilization 2, the person behind the car sort of laughed at me a little bit until I told him, well, listen, I got the call saying that my pre-order was in. So, oh, yeah, okay. You know, so – but that seldom ever happens anymore in which, you know, you can't get a game on launch day. I mean, let me give you an example. I went in and bought – Destiny at GameStop on the day that it was released. I mean, they had a midnight sale, but they, you know. And the question he asked me is if I had a pre-order. I said no, and he said okay, and he just grabbed a copy from the thing. The only difference, if I did have a pre-order, I'm sure I would have gotten some special doodad or thing for pre-ordering, but I didn't pre-order, so I just got the game, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I just personally as a gamer, it's never been that important to me. I can see why it is important to the industry, though. Sometimes you need those, you know, you need to develop those relationships early on with, you know, big box retailers just so you know where you need to ship those copies. I mean, it becomes a logistics thing. We're talking now about how, you know, it's rare to sell out of a copy of a game, but that's because, you know, pre-orders do help the industry judge where it should be sending its physical copies.
Yeah, and also you'll see how many automatic sales they're going to have. You know, I mean, all those pre-orders are sales. You know, they're not – very few people abandon the pre-order, you know. So, oh, I'll give you my deposit back. I decided not to pre-order. You know, that's
– You know, additionally, you can run a pre-order for like 3 to 6 months ahead of time, and then all of those sales count as day one sales. Yeah. So that easily helps you boost your numbers on like, you know, top – grossing, you know, top release weekend games.
Yeah.
Lists.
I did pre-order on Origin Dragon Age Inquisition. Not just because, you know, I got the digital deluxe, but here's the thing about pre-ordering online, pre-ordering for the on Steam or something like that. One thing that it does is that you preload the game so that the second it hits midnight, it unlocks and boom, you have your game right away, you know. That's the one thing about pre-ordering online that actually has a benefit that has nothing to do with pre-order bonuses. You're actually getting it in your home, and the second the clock strikes midnight, or at least specific time, your game is unlocked and you get to play it, you know, without having to go out, without having to do all that stuff. You know, it's right there, and it's already on your hard drive. It already pre-installed, so you're just waiting for that the time to strike.
And right there is an intrinsic benefit to pre-ordering online.
Yeah.
I mean, so I would definitely much rather be playing my game at midnight than sitting at the store at midnight.
Or even, you know, even to just pick it up normally, you know, on day one, you know, you still have to go out of your way. You have to go, you know, walk out from work, go to the store, that sort of thing. But I still have not heard of, you know, there was a pre-order of Dragon Age Inquisition that was sold out, which I was annoyed at. It was $180 order, but it had all the stuff that I would, all the physical stuff that I would want, and I learned about it too late about GameStop. So, you know, by the way, this entire thing I think started with Diablo 2, that collector's edition that was sold out almost immediately online, you know, and it was going on eBay for $200-$300, you know.
I can't remember the last time a game that I wanted sold out on day one.
Yeah. I mean, I know about consoles. The Wii springs to mind.
Yeah.
The Xbox 360 did as well. It was
right, the Wii, but that was, you know, what, we're talking 13 years ago?
2006 was not 13 years ago, Paul.
I'm sorry, I thought it was 2001. Okay, so 7 years ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, because the Xbox 360 was launched in November 2005, and the Wii came a year later, along with the PlayStation 4. I mean, PlayStation 3. Okay, so that is the question, and we want to know your opinion about pre-orders. So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Oh, you know, I'm trying to do this without even looking at the copy. You know, I can't do it yet. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You can enjoy our feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up on facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those weeks in which we got some stuff that, I don't know, were you annoyed? Angry?
We got some interesting tangents, that's for sure.
Were you annoyed, angry, or just bemused at some of the stuff that was in this week's show?
Bemused, a little bit annoyed, but mostly I just pity that one woman who doesn't have the good sense to know what's in her own best interest as a individual, let alone as a woman.
Yeah. But, you know, I hate to do a show recap like this, but, you know, I really thought that the entire thing about Mojang and how the staff becomes the most important thing to someone who's running a studio, you know, sort of spoke to you. You know, I thought that sort of thing was, you know, I mean, as a developer, you probably understood better than anybody that, you know, when, you know, the studio head, a good studio head will think of the staff most of all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Anyways.
Anyway.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, because we're done with the show. I don't have anything that I haven't already said.
Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds.